And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. But Dave, I don't know what to say. We have a new president, president-elect.
Yes, a Scrantonian.
A Scrantonian.
Grant and Joe, I kept calling him on my tweets. Hashtag Scrant and Joe.
That sounds original. So it was Pennsylvania's vote that put him over the top on November 7th.
48 years to the day when he was first elected senator.
Is that true?
That's what I heard. And
also the anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution, which I'm sure Trump will not fail to inform us.
I don't even think he knows what the Bolshevik Revolution was.
Oh, well, that's your point.
But he is an expert on Russia.
He's an expert on Russia. That's right. We have a lot to talk about. It's an amazing situation, right? But because you had three different campaigns. You have the presidential campaign, the senatorial campaign. You have the congressional campaign. You even have the state houses campaign. Yeah. The Democrats won the presidency, not by a lot, but they did win it. But they didn't win the senatorial campaign. They didn't win the House races. They didn't win in the state houses. So we really need to talk about strategy, the various strategies, and try to see get our heads around what happened here.
Yeah, and it's kind of unusual when you have a campaign, and I'm talking on the presidential level first, that when both sides execute their strategy and their strategies work, you know, usually what happens is one side wins because the other side's strategy doesn't work. And here, both sides' strategy worked. Donald Trump... And I had heard this a long time ago, and I think I've said it a couple of times. The day after he won, the day after he became president, started campaigning again for 2020. And one of the things that he did, and one of the things his people wanted to do, was every time they went to a rally, they took names and contact information and built up a huge database of people that were attracted to Donald Trump. Remember, he had lost the popular vote. And he's one of the few people who has lost the popular vote twice for president. But, major party people. I'm not talking about Eugene V. Debs or the former governor of Minnesota, Harold Stassen. I'm talking about, you know, major candidates. I think the only other one may have been Benjamin Harrison. In any event.
And you don't mean Kanye West either. He didn't get the popular vote.
Yeah. No, he didn't get. The popular vote, despite
he did get 70,000 votes. Can you imagine this? 70,000 people actually voted for Kanye West.
Well, look, 70 million people actually voted for Donald Trump. So
I understand. Yes.
Yeah. So anyhow, his strategy was to he had 63 million votes in 2016. And they had a database, I understand, of over 100 million, and they felt if they could get 70% of them out, it would carry them. That's why they continue to play on not just their base, but expanding the demographic of their base to come out, and they were successful. A lot of people in 2016 apparently wanted to vote for him, but didn't think he could win and thought it was wasted or weren't paying that much attention. So he got his 70 million votes. On the other side, Joe Biden, their strategy was to build up the coalition that failed Hillary Clinton and build it up in the states, the blue wall states. And they worked their magic in Pennsylvania and Michigan and in Wisconsin. And also, their strategy was, when the COVID hit, to build up a huge, insurmountable amount of mail-in votes. And they were highly successful in doing that. Let's face it. First of all, in the three states I just mentioned, the fact is, while people were yelling Black Lives Matter, it turns out the black votes mattered just as much, if not more. Joe Biden would not be president-elect if the black vote did not come out in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, if it did not come out in Detroit, Michigan, if it did not come out in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And as a matter of fact, he wouldn't have even been the nominee if the black vote didn't come out in South Carolina. So all
he wouldn't
of those,
have been the nominee, exactly, right.
Yeah. So all of those votes, black votes, mattered in those states. In addition, as I said, the mail-in was incredibly important to him. In Pennsylvania, what we found out is while the same-day vote was trumped up, so to speak, and Trump really was highly successful in energizing his base over the last several weeks after he beat back the COVID virus. He was out there, and people, we saw it in our area where people were coming out. They were partying. They were, you saw tons of signs they were putting out all over the place. They were energized to do this. But the fact of the matter was that it wasn't enough to overcome this mail-in vote that the Pennsylvania had. And what we saw even in the red counties of Pennsylvania, when they started counting the mail-in vote, Biden won in those counties, but he won bigger in the blue counties. And when you look at the blue counties, it was interesting. You started to see a picture where along the eastern part of the state, the Delaware River counties, everyone from Philadelphia up until you hit Pike and Wayne County was blue. Bucks County, Northampton County, Monroe County, they all went based on the mail-in vote for Biden. And then he filled in on the rest of the collar counties around Philadelphia, Montgomery, Chester, and Delaware. And he won in Lehigh County, the Allentown area. He won in Lackawanna County. Remember, Hillary only carried Lackawanna County about 3,500 votes. Biden won by over 10,000, which is only about half of what Obama won by, but it was still enough here. And then Biden won in Dauphin County, Harrisburg, black votes there. He won in the Penn State area, Center County. He won in Allegheny County, which also has some black votes. And then he flipped Erie County. So there was a lot more blue on the Pennsylvania map than it had been in 2016. And I do want to mention something else. In two other states, Arizona and Nevada, where, Arizona, well, actually three other states, Georgia, black votes mattered a lot in Georgia. Stacey Abrams worked her tail off after being beaten there by voter suppression, really. And the vote that put Biden ahead, in Georgia came from John Lewis's home county. The irony, the karma of that was something. Arizona, where Biden is the apparent winner, John McCain's state. And Cindy McCain, Donald Trump, dissed John McCain as a loser in the presidential case, as a loser for being a prisoner of war, and that really, irked the people that liked John McCain and loved John McCain, and so there was karma there where Arizona flipped for the first time in I don't know how many years, since what, 1948 or something. It became a blue state. And then, of course, you had Nevada there also, where, despite his illness, Harry Reid still, and the unions in Nevada, in Clark County and up there in Reno County, Reno's County, still mattered. And they won there. That state flipped. Well, it didn't flip, but it stayed blue. So it was an interesting combination of things that we saw when you analyze this. But you have to also then talk about how successful the Republican strategy is, as you said, in winning the state races. People came out to vote for Trump and Biden, but more of them, you know, in the state races, a lot of the senatorial candidates and the House candidates ran in front of Trump in terms of votes. Pennsylvania was highly disappointing. I was in meetings where the Democrats thought they could flip the state the state House. They needed 9 votes, and they thought they were very close. They lost a couple of votes. The Democratic leader in the House from Allegheny County, Frank Dermody, who, by the way, is a Lackawanna County native, was behind a Republican who also is a Lackawanna County native. Two people out in Pittsburgh area fighting for this. That state hasn't been called yet. Josh Shapiro, who everybody knows is going to run for governor, but first, you know, he was behind on election night by a lot of votes. He only won by the mail-ins, but Nina Ahmed, who was the darling of the liberals in Pennsylvania, lost for auditor general. Now, I happen to think she was a bad candidate because of the fact that she had no auditing experience. She was a scientist, very able woman in those regards, but, you know, she got beat. And Joe Torsella, who was a really able treasurer, who saved the taxpayers a lot of money. He took he changed the way Pennsylvania money was invested and took away the Wall Street grab of this. You know, he put it in funds that are where you don't have to pay huge amounts to the hedge fund managers. He saved hundreds of millions of dollars, and he ran some great ads. And he lost to a lady, you know, who talked about that they take a knee to pray, or he's losing. I don't know if he's going to be able to overcome that thing. So we lost in those respects. And the gerrymandering is going to try to be continued. In Pennsylvania, unlike other states, we have a Democratic Supreme Court, and they're going to block the way the Congress is gerrymandered, and they're going to block the state legislature from doing its deal. The Republicans in the state legislature are going to try to negate the effects of the state Supreme Court by gerrymandering the court districts. I don't think they'll be successful, but they're going to have a constitutional amendment proposed. The thing is that it has to first pass muster in front of the state Supreme Court, and I don't think the state Supreme Court is going to commit suicide. So we have some interesting things to see there. And the Democrats have to figure out how they better message. From what we understand, the message that Donald Trump was on and repeated, socialism, 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 that message cost Biden Florida. And then the other thing, the way Black Lives Matter or defund the police, those things did not resonate with the public, and it made them afraid of Democratic legislators. And so they have to figure out a way to get their points across, but in a way that's a palatable message to the masses of people. That's how I see some of these things.
What about Cartwright?
Matt Cartwright, you know, he came out of Lackawanna County. He's got 5 counties, three fully, Lackawanna, Pike, and Wayne, and then 2 partial, Luzerne and Monroe. And his district is far more compact than it used to be, thanks to the state Supreme Court. And he came out of Lackawanna County with 19,000 vote plurality, and I figured he's a lock. I woke up on Wednesday morning, and he was 9,600 votes behind Jim Bognet. And I thought, oh, my God. Of course, at the same time, Biden was 600,000 votes behind. And then you started seeing the write-in votes come in from Lackawanna County and moreover from Luzerne County. And the more that came in and voted, the more Matt Cartwright started winning. And by the time Lackawanna or Luzerne County votes were counted, he was only down by a couple hundred votes. And then Monroe County came in. And again, what happened is the overwhelming vote of the mail-ins was Democratic. You're talking not, 60-40 or not 2/3, but not 70. You're talking most places 3/4, 75%, 80%, some places 90% Democratic votes. And very quickly on Wednesday afternoon, Cartwright got into the lead. And by the end of Wednesday, it was apparent he was going to win. By Thursday, we knew it was a fact. And right now, as it stands, he's up by 11,000 and some votes. So it was like a 20 or 21,000 vote turnaround just based on the mail-in ballots. Let me just tell you, that's good for the whole district, because Matt Cartwright is now going to be, because of retirement, the majority leader of one of the 12 Senate Appropriations Subcommittees. He is on the Justice, Science, and Commerce Committee, and they fund all of these things. And so his, as he says, and he's told his supporters, he gets to write the funding on those places. And so he's going to be able to direct money for federal agencies towards us. Now, of course, how much of that gets cut down once they have to go into budget negotiations with the Senate, I don't know. But he's also in the majority, and that's a big thing. He's going to have to watch it, though, in 2 years, because they're going to look and say, hey, you know, his majority, his percentage of the vote that at one time was about, he won by 9.5% and 7.5%. He's now only won this district by 3.5%. I think Bognet might take another shot at him. But every election is different. And without Trump on the ballot, it's going to be something different in 2022. But right now, he's in a good position. And I'm very happy for him. I make no bones about the fact that I work with his wife. They're good people. They're honest people. They're honorable people. And he's the kind of public servant that you want. He knows what his job is, and he does it.
So looking at the statewide situation, it looks like John Fetterman, his star has risen.
Yeah. I've said this repeatedly. He is the most popular politician in the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Let me be accurate there. When he ran for lieutenant governor, he wiped out the field. It was about 7-person field, and he got 40-some percent of the vote. That's an enormous plurality. And the New York Times did a study, and he won almost every county in the western 2/3 of the state, of the Commonwealth. He just has a common feel and a common touch to him. He doesn't overdress. He's got tattoos. But, you know, he makes people forget that he's a Harvard graduate. And I believe he's going to run for Senate in 2022. And the field is it's going to be wide open to him. I don't think anybody's going to challenge him on the Democratic side. And the Republicans don't have a candidate right now because Toomey is abandoning that seat. Fetterman's star was even increased because he was the big Pennsylvania spokesman on national television over this election. Unless there's some hidden scandal there, I think he's the next senator from Pennsylvania. And then we have to see who's going to run for governor. We know Josh Shapiro basically is going to have a clear field by the Democrats. The Republicans desperately tried to oust him, and they failed. Or he should have a close to clear field. Who's going to run for the Republican nomination? I'm not sure. I've heard Lou Barletta's name thrown out there. If Trump had won, Barletta would have certainly had a clearer path, because he's Trump's person in Pennsylvania. The other name I heard, but I'm not sure he really wants to get into it, is Charlie Dent. But he's a moderate, and I don't know if he can get the Republican nomination given who they are. If you remember, after the Republicans lost to Barack Obama the second time, they went through this thing called a political autopsy. And it said that they have to be more moderate. It said they have to be more open and welcoming to other people other than white, non-college educated men and women. And they said, thank you very much. We're going to go in the other direction. You know, Charlie Dent appeals to the old moderate Republican base that doesn't really exist much anymore. The Tom Ridges, that kind of person, the Bill Scrantons, the Dick Thornburg types. Who had a more gentle face to the party. So I don't know if he even wants to run. We'll have to see what happens there.
So what do you think now about the dynamics within the Democratic Party in a situation where Schumer, who was in charge of the senatorial campaign, suffered a defeat? Pelosi did not have a victory in charge of the congressional campaign. There's got to be some kind of a turmoil here.
Well, there is and there isn't. And there's two conflicting ideas and theories. One is, 2018, the moderate wing won. And certainly in 2020, Biden, being the more moderate candidate, won. The moderates are going to say, hey, look, we wouldn't be president. If Bernie Sanders ran, that socialism tag was going to kill him. He was going to be Jeremy Corbyn. All right. Where people were devoted to him and, ideologically went out and would have been a huge defeat. So we're right. We look at Biden winning. The liberals are going to say, hey, look, you failed on the down ballot. You didn't have the enthusiasm. But I don't know. It's going to be a tougher sell. The one thing that you worry about with the Democrats is their age factor. You've got a president who's 78. You've got a Speaker of the House who's 80. Schumer's no youngster. Who is the next generation? Now, Kamala Harris certainly is younger. But in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania and who nationally is going to, be next in line to take the party? Steny Hoyer is 80. Jim Clyburn, who certainly is going to have a lot of clout with the administration. He's in his 70s in the House of Representatives. Who's the new generation of leadership there? AOC is got a lot of enthusiasm behind her, but her message ain't going to sell much beyond deep blue districts, it appears. She's going to, gain some more clout, but I don't think it's enough to take over the party. And we'll have to see who's in the wings for Nancy Pelosi. Remember, she said she was going to limit the number of terms she had as speaker. She's already announced she's going to run for speaker this time. She will probably win. But we'll have to see who emerges there to carry on. And they've got to be savvy politicians.
Under Obama, Obama ignored the Democratic Party. And the result was that in the by-elections and in the state elections, the Democrats lost. In the end, when he left office, the Democratic Party was much weaker in terms of candidates that they elected to state and national office than when he got into office, because basically he did nothing to build up the Democratic Party organization.
Yeah, I was really disappointed. The governor of Vermont, Howard Dean, really built up the party, and they let him go. A lot of people said it was because Rahm Emanuel didn't like him or whatever. But if I were Obama, I would have kept Dean on as the Democratic Party chairman. He had the right thing, 50-party strategy. It'll be interesting who he backs for party chairman. One name you keep hearing is Stacey Abrams on there. I think that, after what she did in Georgia, she may have earned that. I would have loved to have seen her as getting a Supreme Court appointment if there is a vacancy there. I don't know if that's going to happen or if she could even get through the Senate. But anyway, that's one name. I don't think Biden is going to make that mistake. I think he learned from Obama's mistake there. And we'll have to see. The party, it's very important. You have to go out state by state and build things up. But don't forget, Donald Trump was a disaster for the Republican Party. They lost a lot of seats in state legislatures while he was president. So it works both ways. It works both ways. But let me get back to one thing. We talked about Schumer failing and Pelosi failing. They relied on the polls. They looked like they were going to be winners before the election. What else could they have done when the polls are showing that they may flip 7 seats in the Senate and actually gain 5 to 15 seats in the House? Why would they changed their strategy. The polling was wrong, and one of the reasons the polling was wrong is they could not poll the people who were coming out for the first time for Trump. And we don't know if those people are going to stay active in the politics. The Republicans, what they're going to need to do is keep those people coming out. What the Democrats need to do is hope they don't come out and, you know, figure out a way to offset them, as they figured out a way on the presidency to offset them. You know, Joe Biden has gotten more votes. He's up by over 4 million, more votes than any person ever to run for president. And all those people say he's lackluster and blah. You know, he did pretty good for himself on that.
Yeah, he's got about 75 million votes.
Yeah.
And Trump has about 70 million votes, a little more than 70
million.
Yeah,
over 70
million. At this point.
Over 70 million.
That's right.
And, you know, and there's going to be some people, you know, in the cabinet. You know, I think Pete Buttigieg, I mean, he kept going on Fox TV and just sticking it to them. You know, they're mental midgets compared to Buttigieg. Every time they brought up a point, he had the answer. And he knows how to speak in terms that people can understand. And the Trump and the Fox viewer could understand. And he's certainly, because he pulled out of the race pitch perfectly and endorsed Biden at the right time, he's going to have a spot. Andrew Yang, I think, is going to have a spot. Remember, Andrew Yang was the guy who said we should give everybody, what, $1,200 or $1,000 a month?
Yeah.
$12,000 a year. And all of a sudden COVID hits and we're giving people $1,200, you know, more than once. It's an idea whose time has come. He's going to have a prominent position, I believe, because he, you know, he was a spokesman for Biden, a surrogate for Biden. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else. Justice Department's going to be very, very important to purge it of these trolls that were in there for Trump, and to dig in to find out all the damage that Bill Barr did. Secretary of State, you got to believe Susan Rice has got to be in position for that or close to that.
But the Republicans would never clear her.
Well,
they didn't clear her last time when she was up for Secretary of State. They made it clear they were not going to allow it.
Right. But she might be National Security Advisor or something where she doesn't have to be confirmed.
She was already National Security Advisor.
Well, she might be back again. And who knows? Who knows who else is out there? It's awful early to speculate, but I think those are names. Because, and then you have to, you know, if Biden only serves one term, I mean, it's going to be tough for him to run at 82. A lot of it depends on how successful he is and how well it is. But let's take it one election at a time. One election at a time.
Well, the American Prospect did a study based on the group that Biden and Bernie set up to work out a joint program. And the American Prospect excerpted that in an article that anybody can read. It's in the New York Times. And came up with 277 different things across the board that Biden can do by executive action that he does not need the legislature, does not need McConnell to sign off on, that could do almost a complete reversal of Trump's damage to the United States and the people of the United States.
Well, the first thing I would do with Joe Biden is on the day he's inaugurated, go back to the White House and sign an executive order saying I'm suspending all executive orders of Donald Trump.
That's right.
And then work back from there.
That's
and
right.
He's got to talk to Mitch McConnell and say, look, Mitch, I'm holding out my hand. You want to do this? You want to get something done? Or if you want to play hardball, I can play hardball. And, it's not Joe Biden's necessarily style, but he's got to do that when you got a guy like McConnell there.
All right. We're talking in the first moments of Biden's being declared the president-elect. We haven't really had time to think about it. Now let's take another week to think about
Grant
it a little
Joe's.
Bit more and talk about this more next week.
Grant and Joe.
Grant and Joe.
Keep saying it. Hashtag Grant and Joe.
See you next week. Grant and Dave.
See you next week. Yep. Susquehanna guy.
All right. Not bad.
Well, I thought we really covered it pretty much. Everything we said we were going to.
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
Right?
Absolutely. Yep. Yep. Sehr gut.
Just a stunning. It's a day. Yeah, we've got to get.
It's a nice day.
Get
it's
lunch
a very
now,
nice
but
day.
It's a. You know, there used to be. You didn't know. You weren't here then, probably. There used to be a radio campaign that I heard promoting Pennsylvania, and the announcer always used to say, it's a beautiful day in Pennsylvania. Well, it is a beautiful day in Pennsylvania, but it's a beautiful day in the United States.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
It's go out and enjoy it, you know? And,
absolutely.
We're going to go out and
right
enjoy
now.
It. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to put my Biden-Harris pin on and walk across the street to get lunch.
Good idea.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Marissa,
don't do that. Talk to you later. Right.
Good,
bye.
You know, talk to you later. Bye.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.